Does God love everyone? The answer is probably an absolute yes. But on this Sunday, which has to do with ushering in finally the reign of Christ, the fullness of the way of Christ on earth as it is in heaven, we also must come face to face with the gut level reality that God's love seems also to include judgment. It has been 27 weeks of ordinary time, green time, since the church's last feast on Pentecost Sunday. It's been an entire half year of green. Next Sunday, December 3rd, begins a new church year with the season of Advent. Before then, this last Sunday of the liturgical year confronts us with the last judgment at the end of time. Matthew 25, 31 to 46. It is my absolutely most favorite scripture. But it raises several complicated questions. Is this a parable or not? Most of us are counting on that. We hope it's a parable, okay? The last judgment is of all the nations. There's language about eternal reward and eternal, like, punishment forever. And both the blessed and the cursed are going to be surprised by their destinies. But these important questions shouldn't obscure a very simple truth. In the words of James Forbes, the former pastor of the Riverside Church in New York City, and I quote, nobody gets to heaven without a letter of reference from the poor. I was hungry and you gave me something to eat, said Jesus. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison. I was sick and you came to visit me. To follow Jesus, to follow the way of Jesus, means to care for the vulnerable. There's no other way. He says that our judgment in the next life will be based on how we treat the poor in this life. This last year has not been easy, even for the preacher. Several of you have openly questioned, and I appreciate it, my judgmentalness, because I have been. I have changed this past year. Perhaps you've seen it. In fact, I know some of you have. Some of you have changed along with me. Some of you have reluctantly accompanied me into territories of judgmentalness, unfamiliar and unknown. Some of you have questioned me, wondering if I have abandoned a sense of hope or encouragement. And some of you have said I have lost my way, too caught up in politics, too strident in my claims about justice, too insistent that our actions matter for bringing about the kingdom of heaven, too heavily bent towards social causes rather than the traditional kind of truth, religious truths of the gospel. You've also, several of you, told me some hard truths. You have been relentless about a vision of justice that seems, well, utopian, almost as if you believed that the kingdom of heaven might really come about. Huh. You have nudged and then urged me into a kind of speech that has surely secured enemies at best and haters at worst. And in the end, maybe together, especially on the Sunday that marks our belief in, our commitment to, and our fight for the reign of Christ, the way of Jesus, we have realized that being a person of faith means deciding what is at stake for us. Whether we will persist in bringing about the Beatitudes, or whether we will stand idly by and explain our complacency and compliance at the end of time. Now, perhaps, if you are a lectionary follower, you're relieved by the end of year A, which is the gospel according to Matthew. And up until a few weeks ago, incidentally, I could hardly wait to get out of the book of Matthew because Mark comes next and it's my favorite gospel. But then things kept happening, like women willing to name the pain of years imprisoned by the shame and blame of sexual harassment. Black men and women and children ably stating that black lives do not matter as much as white lives in our culture. Like mental illness being labeled as a culprit for our decision to choose the right to carry guns over the right to life. Like LGBTQIA students taking the vulnerable step of marking the Transgender Day of Remembrance. You know, I could keep going on all that has happened in this past year, but you see my point, I hope. I've come around to accepting Matthew's gospel that has judgmentalness at its core. And so there is no better text to end the year of Matthew, no better text to reign to the reign of Christ Sunday than this. Lord, when was it when we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? And when was it that we saw you a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it, Lord, that we saw you sick or in prison and we visited you? And the king will answer them, truly I tell you, just as you did it for one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me. Why is this passage so apropos for this Sunday? Because Jesus says to us, if you did not see or experience the reign of Christ in your life, before you cast the blame somewhere else, you better examine yourself first. If you have to ask Jesus, when was it? You're not paying attention. Furthermore, if you have to ask Jesus, when was it? You really do not believe that your actions make a difference for moving Christ's reign to its fullest expression. When was it? Is never a question for those who are certain of God's sovereignty and God's activity in this world, even though all evidence points to the contrary. When was it? It's never a question for those who are convinced that the Great Commission to be the salt of the earth is no mere euphemistic claim. When was it? Is the question of those hopeful for a different Jesus to justify their behavior? So let's end this 2017 year with asking the question. Why are so many people poor? It's not nobody's fault. It's just the way things are. But you know, poverty and homophobia, racism, transphobia, sexism, and abuse do not result from accidental forces of history. The deplorable disparities between the rich and the poor aren't inescapable or necessary. Rather, they result from our being too often people who live unexamined lives, as well as from structural, systemic violence and economic policies and corporate strategies. Some people are poor because of the choices other people have made. Many people are poor because of that. And yes, some people are poor because of their own choices. I understand that. It is stated often that God has a preferential option for the poor. They say something like that God is biased, even prejudiced. And far from being neutral or impartial, many argue biblically so and from pulpits like this, that God plays favorites, you might say, by bestowing special favor on the dispossessed. And the Bible suggests that God asks us to do the same. This isn't a new idea. It's a prominent theme throughout Scripture, especially in prophets like Amos and poetry like Psalm 146. I quote, "Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute," end quote, says Proverbs 31:8. When Paul met with the Christian leaders in Jerusalem, maybe you don't know this, but the early church people who followed Jesus didn't like the Apostle Paul, okay? And he kept coming to Jerusalem and they kept kicking him out, saying, "Oh, why don't you go up to Turkey or Asia Minor? They need you up there." They didn't like Paul in Jerusalem. His ideas were theologically liberal. He had not met the living and breathing Jesus. He had simply met or claimed to have met a vision of the resurrected Christ. And the early church simply wanted Paul gone. They threw him up to the north. And Paul writes about this in the book of Galatians. When he met with the leaders in Jerusalem, he says, and I quote, that the only thing that they ask of me was in my journeys to remember the poor. The very thing, Paul says, that I was most eager to do. For 10 years, as he traveled among groups of new believers, Paul organized a famine relief effort for the people of Jerusalem. He kept bringing it back and rubbing it in their faces, okay? In Acts, Luke describes the daily distribution of food to widows. And James, the Apostle James, says that true and undefiled religion is to care for the poor, end quote. 100 years later, Tertullian wrote how God had a peculiar respect for the lowly, and that caring for the poor was the distinctive sign of true believers, end quote. Even the pagan emperor Julian the Apostate, 361 to 363, he was a short emperor, as in short length of time, okay? I have no idea what size his fingers were, who vehemently opposed Christians and stripped them of their rights and privileges. He acknowledged in his writing that the Christian preferential option for the poor, and I quote, "The godless Galileans feed not only their poor, but ours," end quote. Care for the poor is the privileged way to serve God. And I think we care for the poor not out of guilt, not out of some ascetic renunciation, some communistic ideal that rejects private property, not because the poor are virtuous, they're just normal people. Rather, in serving the poor, we care for our own souls by imitating the character of God's self. Only in heaven, said Mother Teresa, will we understand how much we owe the poor, get this, how much we owe the poor for helping us to love God like we should, end quote. In 1950, the Baptist minister Bob Pierce founded World Vision with the words, "Let my heart be broken with the things that break the heart of God." Today, World Vision is a $1 billion-a-year relief agency. Millard Fuller was a self-made millionaire by the age of 29 who renounced his wealth to follow Jesus. He followed an interracial community in Georgia called Koinonia Farms, and out of that context founded Habitat for Humanity that builds housing for the poor all over the world. Paul says that care for the poor, and I quote here, was the only thing that the leaders in Jerusalem asked of him, and that it was the very thing that he was most eager to do. One final question. What about all that hell and final judgment that is mentioned in Matthew 25 and all those verses? It's in the very last sentence of his chapter, Hell, in his book, The Problem of Pain, C.S. Lewis put it this way. This chapter is not about your wife or son. It's not about Nero or Judas Iscariot. It's about you and me. I think that hell exists. I happen to believe that because of God's mercy, it's empty. Let us not be empty. Let us love God as we care for the most vulnerable, and then we will be full of God.